sure enough, there were trustees out there on that cold night, too. If nothing else, the picture, I think there was a picture of us in the paper the next day.
Oh, absolutely.
And people had to understand we were pretty serious, or we wouldn't have been there. But it was an opportunity. We had sent messages to the leadership candidates, stating once again what some of the issues were, and asking them to make sure that they covered the education issue in their platforms as they ran for the leadership. That night, Elizabeth Whitmer, in her speech, said that if she was made Premier of Ontario through that leadership race, she would, within 90 days, complete a review of the education funding formula. Pretty powerful stuff. A couple of, about a half an hour before she spoke, her people were actually out at the fence talking to us as we marched up and down. And when they went back, they said, we're going to pass this message on to Elizabeth Whitmer and just see if she wants to do something with it tonight. And we'll never know for sure whether it was that that caused her to put this in her campaign platform or not. But that night it was in the campaign platform, and that was an absolutely critical event for us. The Whitmer Promise. So, Pam, I think it was time to get down to another budget.
Oh, boy.
After you.
That budget, that spring 2002, or early spring 2002 budget, the school board staff had recommended $33 million in cuts, $12 million in cuts to special education alone. I mean, we're talking here transportation cuts, library cuts, maintenance cuts. We had to close libraries because water was leaking in the roofs. They were so ill-maintained. We had to close washrooms at some schools. We heard about washrooms being closed. Just cuts, cuts, cuts across the board. This came from the staff, not from the trustees. I want to make that clear. So it was a staff-recommended budget, and the trustees were smart enough to organize community events culminating in a town hall, a televised town hall, that brought out hundreds, many hundreds of people from the community to the school board offices to talk about the budget. Now, this is kind of unheard of where people get really keen on a budget, but we were being asked, what should we cut? Now, needless to say, there was nobody there too keen to answer that question, but we actually toyed with it among ourselves. And initially we had thought that we'd recommend to trustees that they cut all of transportation, because we knew that that would hurt the voters most in the conservative ridings. So we thought about this. We really seriously toyed with the idea. But then that night, we had an opportunity as part of this town hall meeting to talk to conservative parents who were out there as well. Now, we've worked with them all along to some extent, but they were out there in quite some numbers. And we started to engage in a dialogue about what to cut with them. And what we found out in our discussions with some of these people is that they wanted to see everything cut, because after all, that's what they had elected the conservative government to do. But the bottom line was that they could not stomach cuts to special education. When you press them on the issues, special education was sort of the one sacred cow they couldn't stomach. So we actually changed our tactics at that point and realized that if we are going to turn this around politically, that we would have to bring these people into the tent. We would have to make them support the political campaign that we had. And we essentially left the we didn't recommend anything. We left the staff recommended budget to go ahead with those special education cuts in them, because number one, we knew we had already mobilized the special education parents tremendously. But number two, we knew that this was a winning issue, that we could bring a lot more of these conservative parents working with us.
So just before I go on with the budget story, there was another shoe that fell on the heads of the conservative government. They must have felt like there was a centipede up there with all these shoes falling on them. But the one of the networks that's out there that is very strong and respected is the Committee of Directors of Education. The Directors of Education, of course, are our senior executives, most senior executives. All 72 of them, French Catholic, all 72 of them signed a letter to the minister, saying that we need more money. Lots of it. They didn't quantify it, but the letter was very, very clear. So we continued our deliberations of the staff budget that had proposed $33 million in cuts. We thought we'd try and be somewhat reasonable, at least somewhat compromising, and we actually accepted enough changes or made enough changes of our own to bring the deficit down to 24 million, or the cuts down rather, so that the deficit was only 24 million. But we gave up at that point. We said, no, enough of this. You'll remember the prior year. We said we'd already gone too far. What we did then was we drafted what we called the accountability budget, trying to be extremely clear of what our point was. And we said that for this coming year, the government had to give us at least another $50 million and then had to keep on working on this funding formula problem until it got resolved. And so we accrued $50 million of revenue in our budget, had a nice little surplus, which we managed to spend to bring it to a balanced budget. Really clever, eh? Well, the press had a field day. Talk about give the dog a bone. A T-bone. The next day, woke up to the newspapers. Front page of the city section was filled with two major articles by the opinion writer in The Citizen, just slamming trustees, and it was quite unbelievable. The word stupid was in there somewhere, and I can tell you, people were getting pretty upset. By 10 o'clock Friday morning, I had a call from the editor of City Page apologizing, if you can believe it. That's how bad it was. What he did was he offered me chance of a lifetime to put my own opinion piece on the front page of the paper on Monday. I said, thanks, there goes my weekend. Because I can't just write what I want, of course. I draft something, we pass it around, people comment, it gets better and better, and finally we put it to bed and away it goes. But anyway, that was just an incredible moment in the history of our relationship, if that's what I can call it, with the good old Ottawa Citizen.
So now we had, at this point, all the province, people involved in education throughout the province, concerned that all the boards weren't going to be able to meet their budgets. Not necessarily that year, but by sure the year after, there were many, many boards facing similar situations. The teachers' federations throughout the province, the staff unions, students, OCASC in our area, we get together to organize citizens' forums. Now, this was led by the teachers' federations, and they set them up in all the regions throughout the province and in all the bigger and smaller cities. Essentially, the idea was to bring together citizens from the communities around tables such as you have tonight, put a teacher at each table, put a student at each table, put a parent at each table, and put leaders from the community with these people. So they brought in people from business, from churches, from nonprofit groups, all the various leadership in that community to talk, sit around the table and talk about education. And it was a marvelous evening because some of these people, for them, the dime started to drop, the penny dropped rather. They began to understand that there was a real crisis, that trustees weren't just crying wolf, that they had to get on board to start to save public education. And certainly I think those round tables that were held throughout the province helped to change the tone in the province, helped to get around the conservative media, and helped to basically set a new tone in the community as far as how people were looking on the education crisis. At the same time, we prepared a flyer that went home to every single parent in the Ottawa-Carleton District School Board through the backpacks, and for the high schools, they were mailed home with the end-of-year report cards. We called the daily newspaper Conrad Black's Rag there to task. We called all the editors in the newspaper, and we demanded as parents to sit down and have an editorial meeting with them. Now, understand that the newspaper and the provincial government had targeted everyone else as a special interest group. Teachers were special interests, staff were special interests. Everybody was a special interest in the province, but they had hoped to court parents. They had hoped to appeal to parents with private school tax rebates. They had the newspaper had been pandering to parents over the last couple of years. So they couldn't then turn around and completely ignore the parents. So we had a meeting where six of our executive members, representing all sorts of different interests, went in and met with these editors. And basically, we went through that funding formula and had a serious discussion with them on each of the points. Now, we don't know how much this affected some of their decision-making later, but within a month, there was a five-part series of articles, five pages, that explore different aspects of the funding formula in Ontario. Major, major coverage. Well-researched, fair, balanced coverage. So this was a very big change for us. And at this point, poor Jim's got to deal with this deficit budget. Ottawa was the first board to pass a deficit budget, in fact.
Yeah, and just before we did that, we passed a consultation policy. We'd worked on it a long time. Mm. Our board believes very much in consultation. We believe the system belongs to the people. We need to know what it takes or what they want us to do with it. So this consultation policy we'll mention again in a few minutes. That's why it was at that point in time we passed that. The accountability budget, again, we voted twice to make sure that people really wanted to vote for it. There was a lot of pressure, as I mentioned, the prior year, the same sorts of things. We requested an investigator again, and guess what? This time we were blessed with the appointment of an investigator, Mr. Al Rosen, a forensic accountant, ladies and gentlemen, a forensic accountant from Toronto. We were really lucky. Now, Al Rosen was a pretty good guy. He was a CA and so on and so forth, but I don't know that he had a lot of experience with the media, which was a pretty good thing because the media, as soon as his name was announced, pounced on him. And I have a tape of a CBC interview done at that time. And he promised that to the CBC interviewer that, yes, if revenues are part of the problem, if the funding formula is part of the problem, he will be looking at that and he will report on it. Well, you can imagine our shock when in his final report he said the funding formula is not within the scope of his work. Somebody else is looking at that. He avoided the fundamental issue completely. So I won't go into a lot of the process that we went through with him, but suffice to say that his report was due out on August 6th. That was a Friday, so Thursday night I was in my day job office trying to get caught up on some stuff, knowing that the next day I was going to lose a bit of time to the press because they'd want to talk to me. So it was about 9 or 9:30 that night while I was in my office, if you can believe it, I get a call from the press. The report had been leaked, or at least the executive summary had been leaked, and they wanted to know what I thought of it. I don't know what I think of it. I haven't seen it. I haven't seen anything. So they knew me pretty well by then, and they were quite comfortable faxing over what they had, and they said, give it a quick scan and then call me back, and so I get it. I see that they have made this fundamental change in scope. The funding formula wasn't to be looked at all. It was a very insulting report vis-a-vis trustees, which would not surprise you at all, and also quite erroneous. In any case, what the trustees really had to do after dealing with the media was sit down and immediately develop a response to the minister. I took a day off, sat down with some of my colleagues. Others were helping us as well. So we got a very potent response back. One thing that was very interesting, this thing was about 275 pages thick or something like that. Lots of appendices and so on. And we were focused on a lot of the main issues, but one of the ladies on the Special Education Advisory Committee was there helping us out a bit. She'd gone through all of this. Don't know how she did it. But what she found was three references to faults with the funding formula buried in appendices, which even forensic accountant Al Rosen hadn't noticed in his own report. So we brought these to the attention of the minister. You know, shortfall in transportation, $13 million, and on it went. Didn't matter, you know, didn't matter. But I can tell you that there were a couple of other reports that he did later, which Pam will mention, and they were scrutinized a lot more closely. In any case, one of the lessons from that is we do have a lot of great people out there. More minds on the matter, you're going to do a better job. Mm-hmm. Pam, what happened after?
Well, then the Toronto and Hamilton school boards passed deficit budgets, in fact. And Al Rosen was dispatched again, and we then had the blessing of a supervisor being appointed to run our board, which meant that the trustees were stripped of power. And a fellow named Merv Bechstead with the tremendous ego, Merv Bechstead, that was going to come in and fix the Ottawa board, was appointed. Now, he had been a former municipal chief administrative officer, didn't have any experience with schools, and he's appointed to run this. On October the 27th, he makes big cuts. August the 27th, he makes big cuts just before school's about to start. $3.7 million to special education. He ends a speech program for kindergarten kids, a Head Start program. These are children who don't speak and are kindergarten age. So he cuts that completely. And he twins schools so that two schools have one principal. It means that principals are traveling miles and miles between schools and saves an additional $1 million by doing that. Now, I can tell you from parents who were involved in these schools, a number of these principals subsequently became very ill, physically ill from stress. Many of them ended up taking stress leave, and there was then a constant struggle to find principals who were willing to take on the two-school role. I think at this point, Jim is getting going with a court case.
Pam, some of us had the unmitigated gall to actually launch a suit against the provincial government for inadequate process and inadequate evidence when they did that very undemocratic thing of appointing Mr. Bechstead. What was that? Yeah, that was a tough decision too, but we had to put a lot of work into the evidence and so on. Unfortunately, we didn't win the suit. Not because we weren't right about the lack of process and the inadequate evidence, but what was determined by the judge was that in this particular case, the way the legislation worked, there was no need for fairness in process. It wasn't necessary. We've asked Mr. McGinty to look into that.
So by October then, our new supervisor decides to hold a public meeting because legally he's been told he has to hold some public meetings. And he basically gets up and eviscerates all the Ottawa-Carleton District School Board's bylaws. He completely suspended all the bylaws. And he rescinded the consultation policy completely. Now, I have to set this up a little bit for you. It's a bit like the setup tonight. You know, there's an audience. A lot of us went. We brought our kids. And Mr. Bechstead and his director of education are way up on a very high stage. And the director of education would read out the motion. And Mr. Bechstead would say, "So moved." And then the director of education would say, "Do you pass the motion?" And he goes, "Accepted." And that would be the extent of it all. No debate, no questions at all in the process. For the press that attended this theater of the absurd, they found it a little bit comical too. Everybody found it quite comical. At the end, Mr. Bechstead graciously allowed a few hand-picked parents not in our fold, to make a few presentations, for the most part not in our fold, calling for closing schools so that they could have new schools built in their neighborhoods. Now, everybody at this point, all the parents in the audience, were doing a little bit of heckling. It was kind of a bizarre process, our democratic rights stripped away. And you get to the point where you think, this man is just getting away with murder. You know, we have a democratic process, and it's gone. It's gone completely. We're watching outside. A few of us straggle around. I've got my two kids in tow. My little guy is holding my hand. And I just spotted Mr. Bechstead doing a television interview. Well, I looked down at my little guy and I said, "Are you feeling brave, Nicholas?" So he sort of looked up to me and held my hand more tightly. The older kid took off and hid behind a pillar. And Mom and Nicholas marched over to Mr. Beckstead. I just started quietly heckling. Mr. Beckstead, have you been to my son's class? Mr. Beckstead, have you gone to any of the schools that you've twinned? Have you gone out in the community at all to any of your schools? Just very polite heckling. Well, this man pulled out his earphone, got very angry, gave me a look, and said to the CBC, this interview is over. The CBC cameramen, they're a bit stuck. They had been trying to shoo me away. They had been trying to debate me on the side, but now they're stuck. They're live. I didn't know they and they've got time to fill. So they decide on that moment in time that they're going to give me the last word, in fact. So I started explaining all that had been going on, and I'm getting fairly emotional at this point. And there's little Nicholas at my side, and I'm talking about my son, and I'm saying, but we don't have democratic rights. How, as parents, are we going to influence our school children's schooling? We've been stripped of our democratic rights. This is the only way that we can now get our message out. Well, it was interesting. You know, sometimes in life you see moments and you just have to act on them. And it's important. Part of the message is you have to be flexible. You don't know what's coming down and you just act. So Nicholas was actually quite proud of being there that night. And we walked away quite content, not thinking anything of it. I didn't even watch the news that night because apparently it was replayed, but I didn't think to watch it at all. And the next day, I went into my elder son's school. Well, the school staff were all brimming at me, and the vice principal comes out, and she said, you know what was funny? I was sort of listening to my TV last night, and I hear this parent heckling, and I think, I know that voice. And then she said, and then I see your face, you know? Hey, great job. So I just said, you know, I just did what you always tell the kids to do in a situation when you're dealing with a bully. Use your words. Well,